Now we're holding Memches Omud Beis by the Mishnah, four lines from the bottom. So now to round out what we've been learning as far as cases where an ox gores, which has been the subject of the last two prakim or two and a half prakim or so. So now we're going to deal in more detail with something that we touched on about a week ago in the previous parak, the case where a pregnant woman is injured and miscarries, and what happens as far as that. Now the Torah tells us that two people are fighting and one of them hits a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, then he has to pay dmei vladis. He has to pay the value of the babies, which now we're going to see in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, how exactly we calculate that. So now our Mishnah is going to tell us it's different with a shur, though. The Mishnah says, shur shohi miskavim l'chaveilu. If a shur intended to injure a different shur, and instead it hit a woman, and her babies came out, in other words, she miscarried, the owner of that animal is potter from dmei vladis, because we've learned before that kind of thing applies only to a person. Now, does that imply that if the shur did intend to hit her, then he is chayiv in dmei vladis? We'll see about that in the Gemara. The odom shayin miskavim lachaver. On the other hand, if you have a person intended to hit somebody else, v'hika se'isha v'yotzi yodeha, and he hit the woman and she miscarried, mishalom dmei vladis, then he pays dmei vladis as it says in the pasuk. Ketzed mishalom dmei vladis. How exactly do you calculate and pay dmei vladis? Shomene se'isha. We have to evaluate the value of the woman. Suppose she were to be sold as a slave woman. And which, of course, is going to depend on her age, on her health, and general factors. You figure out kamahi yofa ad shela yolda, how much would she have been worth before she gave birth, when she's pregnant? Where at that point we assume that her value is going to be more, whether because it shows that she's in good health, it shows that she's fertile, etc. We're not even talking about, by the way, the fact that the potential buyer might also be buying the children. That's going to be a separate calculation. We're going to talk about that soon in the Mishnah and the Gemara. We're talking about just as far as the value of her own value. The Tanakhama is saying goes up during the pregnancy, because the very fact that she's pregnant means a potential buyer would figure that therefore she's healthy, she's fertile, she's whatever. And now how much is she worth after she gave birth? Because then her value goes down. Now, to be sure, eventually she would have given birth anyway, and that value would have gone down. So Rabbi Yohannes then explains that what we're talking about is we're figuring out how much her value would be during that time, during what would have been the rest of her pregnancy, and then that's the amount. And then that's how much he pays. So says the Tanakhama, that's how much he pays. But then Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, but Rav Shimon Gamliel says that calculation doesn't work. In Cain, Misha Isha Yeledes Mashvachas. On the contrary, a woman's value goes up after she gives birth, because when you think about it, during the pregnancy, yes, she may be looking healthier, she may be larger, she may have a certain glow to her, as pregnant women often do. But on the other hand, there's always the possibility she may die in childbirth. So then, in that case, a potential buyer would factor that in figuring out how much he'd be willing to pay for her as a slave woman. So in that case, on the contrary, that goes up after she gives birth, when she's out of that danger. So then, in that case, then the mazik's going to be paying is going to be paying nothing or next to nothing. Ella, rather, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, the way you have to do it is shomenes avlodis kamahen yofin. You have to figure out the value of the babies themselves, meaning, in other words, potentially, if somebody were to be, again, if we're talking on the slave market over here, potentially, if somebody wanted to buy just these unborn babies with the idea, in other words, the mother won't belong to him, but the babies, once they're born, will, and he can raise them and use them as slaves, how much would he be willing to pay for that? Obviously, there would be a certain deduction, because they may not get born. They might be stillborn. They might be deformed. Who knows what? But at least, in other words, there's at least that you can talk about. Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying you are talking about a positive factor that then you can calculate and have the guy pay. Now you do have. We did learn before. You had We had Rashi and Tosfos discuss this. Tosfos in particular discussed this a few days back when we had a whole sugya on this in the previous parak on this topic of hitting a woman and making her miscarry and the Dmei Vlodis and all of that. We had a whole sugya about it back on Daf Mem Beis. Because in particular we were dealing with the Rav Yisak Lili over there said that we learned from a pasuk that the owner of a shur is potter from Dmei Vlodis, so that led us into a bit of discussion on this topic. So Rashi learns over here that the whole machlokas of the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel is exactly that, to how we figure the value of the babies. On the other hand, Tosfos says that you'd have, so in other words, the Tanakhama is saying you have to consider her difference in value between before and after, and Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying you can't do that because then that would be counterproductive. You have to consider only the babies. Tosfos earlier learns that actually, both the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel are going to agree that you only figure out the value of the babies. After all, unlike with the Gemara is going to give us an example of a donkey. We had at the beginning of the parak an example with a cow, whatever. Though the Gemara is going to give us an example soon with a shivcha. With all of those, the guf belongs to the owner. Here, the guf of the woman doesn't belong to her husband. Only the vlodis do. So therefore, the Tanakhama can't really be saying that we consider the difference in her value, because then that would amount to saying that her value itself belongs to the husband, and it's not really so. Rather, Tosfos says that what it means is the machlokas is just how we're calculating the value of the babies themselves. So, Tosfos says, no, the other way around. The Mishnah is not really talking about how to calculate the value of the babies themselves. Rather, Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chacham are talking about how to calculate the difference in her value, which is something that, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, the difference, as far as the babies, that's going to be paid to the husband, actually, as the Mishnah is going to continue. But the difference in her own value before and after, Tosfos points out, that would really have to go to partially to her and partially to her husband, as would be the case with any injury that happened to her. Anyway, continues the mission of the Noisim Labal, so you pay the Dmei Vlodis to the husband, as the Torah says. The Im Ein Labal, if she doesn't have a husband, so her husband died, or she's divorced, if her husband died, Noisim LeYoshev, then you give it to his Yoshin, because in other words, we're talking about that he was still alive when the injury happened, so therefore he was Zoyche, and so now it goes to his Yoshin. What happens if the woman was a shivcha what if she was a shivcha and now she was freed? Now we're talking about that when we say now she was freed, Rashi explains that we're talking about she was recently freed in the sense that she and her husband don't have children yet. Now Rashi learns that what we mean over here is we're not so much focusing on the fact that she's a shivcha meshachreres or gioras, as the Mishnah continues. We're not so much focusing on her. Rather, a shivcha meshachreres typically is going to be married to an eved meshachrer. A gioras is typically going to be married to a ger. Therefore, we really have to focus more on the husband. And as we've learned before, if the husband is a ger, an eved meshuchrer, he's not considered to have any family in halacha until he has children. Once he has children, then those children will be his yoshim, but he has no others. He has no brothers, he has no parents, no siblings, as far as halacha is concerned, because gershin is geyer, gekotin shen noladom, and an eved meshuchrer is basically the same thing. So that being the case, then what we mean is that if she's a recently freed shivcha or a recent giyoris, so therefore she and her husband have no other children other than these ones that she just miscarried. So now, if her husband dies, then there's nobody to collect the Dnei Vlodis, because the Torah assigns it to her husband, and now her husband is dead and he has no yoshim. As we've discussed before, a woman doesn't inherit her husband; it's the other way around. A husband inherits his wife. Machlokas in the Gemara whether it's midaraisa or midirabanan. So therefore, So in that case, the Mishnah finishes off Potter. Then the one who hit her is going to be Potter from Zmei Flodis, because now there's nobody to get them. The husband himself is dead and he has no Yoshin. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos earlier discusses a different way of understanding it. That we are focusing on her being a shifcher or mishuchreres. So the Tosfos brings over there the riva that we're talking about over there, that she had become pregnant while she was still a shifcher, and now before the injury happened, then already she had become a shifcher mishuchreres during the pregnancy. Tosfos over there points out there are difficulties with that explanation, and they prefer Rashi's explanation, and it fits better with the sugya that we're going to learn over here as well. So again, the focus is not so much on her being a shivcha or giyores. The focus is more on the fact that that her husband is an eved meshuchrer or ger, as the case may be, and then when he dies, then he has no yosh. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Time of the miskaven lachaveri. Why are we saying that the owner of the shur is potter from paying dmei vlodis? Is the miskaven lachaveri is because the shur was originally intending to just to attack and injure another shur, and then she was caught in the crossfire. Ha miskaven laisha, implying that if the shur did deliberately go to attack the woman, mishalom dmei vlodis. It sounds like he would pay dmei vlodis. The problem with that is lema teva tiyuvta d'rab adaba ava. Then in that case, does that come out from that a contradiction to rab adaba ava to amar rab adaba ava shvarim shiniskav nileisha p'turim midmei vodis, where rab adaba ava says that no, if the ox does intend to gore the woman, then he's still potter from dmei vodis, and he had learned it from, you have the word anoshim in this connection, b'chiyunotzu anoshim, and Rabbi Adaba Ava explained that it means that with anoshim, there's going to be a difference who they intended to hit, where they may be chayiv misa if they intended to hit her, and then they ended up killing her, as opposed to oxen, they're always, as opposed to oxen, it says Ubala show Noki, and then the potter from Dmei Vlodis completely, whether Miskaven or whether ain't Miskaven. So our Mishnah would seem to contradict Rav Adaba Ava. The answer is Amalach Rav Adaba Ava, who are dinned after the Miskaven Isha Nami Turim and Dmei Vlodis. No, in fact, even if the shur intended to hit the woman, still the Mishnah might be implying that the owner is potter from Dmei Vlodis. The only reason the Mishnah mentions the case where it intended to hit another one is because that's the problem, because that's what's bringing up the problem, because you're saying that only when he miskaven lachaveri are you saying he's potter ben mevlodis, and the implication sounds like when he's miskaven for her is chayev. No, the reason the Mishnah phrases it that way is just idi the kabbal misnis sefer, because the Mishnah wants to continue in the sefer odem shay miskaven lachaveri, where you have the case of a person who intends to hit somebody else, the hachik sivkra, and that's the scenario that the pasuk mentions. So therefore, katani reisha nami shosho miskaven lachaveri. Therefore, in the reisha, it also uses the expression a shur that meant to hit another one, but not necessarily to exclude the case where it intended to hit her. Yes, according to Rav Adaba Ava, we would say that either way, the owner of the shur is potter, because the whole concept of dmei vlodis applies only to people, not to animals, and that's why you have the word anoshim, and that's why you have the word uvala shonoki, as we learned previously on Daf Mem Beis. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Papa. Now let's talk about, at the end of the Mishnah, we talk about when you have a shifcha meshuchreres, we're fine, she's a full-fledged Jew, so then you have dmei vlodis, and the question is, who gets them? So her husband gets them, unless, as we said, her husband himself is a ger or an eved meshuchrer, and then he dies without any yoshim, and then the one who hit her is potter from dmei vlodis. But let's talk about when she still is a shifcha at the time. So the Papa says, shor shenogach as a shifcha, v'yotzu l'odeha, so for sure, so for sure, it struck a pregnant woman and she miscarried, it struck a shivcha when she was still a slave woman, the yotzi yodeh, and she miscarried, mishalem's made lodis, then Rav Papa says it's different than the case of our Mishnah. Then the owner of the shor is going to pay the made lodis. My timer, chamarta ma'abarta ba'alma huda azik, because then, in effect, when we're talking about a shivcha, then we're talking about it's the equivalent of the shur hitting a pregnant donkey. The same way, there's no question if a shur hits a pregnant animal and makes it miscarry, he's going to be chayev. That was the case we had at the beginning of the perek, where shur shenogach hazapara. We had the suffix over there, whether he caused the animal to miscarry, and because of that, we had the different dinim of whether he pays half, or whether he pays half of chatzi nezek, or according to sumchos, or nothing at all, because I'm oitzim achavel avaraya. But if we knew for a fact that the shur had caused the parah to miscarry, then yes, he would be paying for everything as well, dmei vlodis included. Well, the same thing over here. When it comes to a shivcha is considered for that purpose like a donkey. The amakra, as we find, where Avraham says to Eliezer and Yishmael, shvulachan pori machamer, you stay over here with the donkey, and imachamer means amadoim alachamer, people who are similar to a donkey, so therefore, so you have in halacha an eved, and we learned this in Kiddushin, in particular, an eved is an eved ein loy chayis, as we learned there, which means that with an eved, there's no such thing as yuchsin. We don't say that we don't say a certain eved is the son of a certain eved father or the son of a certain goyish father. We don't say that. It goes strictly according to the mother, in which case it's similar to the way we do with animals, where in halacha in general we're not concerned about the father's parentage when it comes to animals. So therefore, in that sense, then the same way as if the shur were to hit a pregnant donkey, the owner would be chayev for everything, including dmei vlodis, so it is over here when it's a shifa. Only when you have, when it was a regular Jewish woman, or shivcha ben ishtahra, which is also like a regular Jewish woman, then there is the maid lotus. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, Ketzit Mishalem's maid lotus. So how do we figure the maid lotus? So we had, the Tanakhama had said, you have to consider how much she's worth while she's pregnant, and how much she's worth after she's pregnant. The question is, dmei vlodis, what do you mean? And how is that only dmei vlodis? Shvach vlodis mi barilei. The expression then should be that we're considering, you're also considering the increase in her own value, the fact that she herself looks healthier. So why are you calling it only, why are you calling it only dmei vlodis? you should be calling it dmei vlodis or shvach vlodis. That's according to Rashi, according to Tosfos that we said before. Tosfos understands the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel differently. That we said that the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel are just addressing strictly the difference in value, as the difference in value as far as per, how we calculate that. So they would understand the question. So they understand the question somewhat differently. Given that the Mishnah is not even talking about how to calculate the value of the babies, so why is the Mishnah saying? Why is the Mishnah saying shvach vlodis? Why is the Mishnah saying shomenes of vlodis? If in case of mishalim dmei vlodis, if in fact the Mishnah is not really addressing the value of the vlodis at all. And the answer is hochinami karma. In fact, that is what the Tana means. He does mean to include ketzim shalom, dmei vlodis, ushvach vlodis. How do you calculate the both of them according to Rashi? Or only the shvach vlodis according to Tosfos, and then dmei vlodis is going to have to be calculated separately. Shomnes isha kamei yafa adshle yolda, v'kamei yafa mishi yolda. You have to consider her value before she gave birth and after it. Meaning, in other words, that what you really have is, in other words, you have a few different things you have to consider over here, Rashi points out. You have the nezik to her, the fact that she was injured. Now you have like this, the actual nezik, the fact that from now on she's going to be weaker and therefore worth less. That's that kind of nezik you have way back in Ksubas. We learned that you have a general din when a married woman is injured. You have a general din about how it's split percentage wise between her and her husband. It depends whether it was a visible part of her body or a not so visible part of her body. We split it in one case, she gets two-thirds and the husband gets, and the husband gets one-third when it's begolui, and then therefore the husband now has, now it's more of a, she suffered the nezek, but also now that it's begolui, that it's an exposed part of her body, then everybody else sees it in the future, and therefore it's a gnai to the husband as well. Then two-thirds goes to him, one-third to her, whatever. That part of that kind of nezek, the fact that she herself is going to be weaker in the future, that we're not factoring in over here. That we're not even talking about over here. That's just treated like regular nezek, and it gets split percentage-wise between her and her husband. Toys just pointed out earlier that we're not talking about ripui over here, because as far as tsar over here, also it would go to her because she's the one who suffered the tsar. As far as ripui, there may not be much ripui involved over here because of miscarriage. You don't necessarily need much ripui afterwards. It depends, obviously, I guess, what stage of the pregnancy we're talking about. Sheves, she anyway would have had to take off a certain amount of time off work after she had the babies, even if she had given birth normally. So therefore, we're not really factoring that in as well. So therefore, and Boshes, it depends on the different opinions, whether he'd even be Chayiv and Boshes in this case. Anyway, here we're focusing on something else. Aside from those up to five things, here we have the special issue of Dmei Vlodis. So we have to consider that, again, when we say Shomanes Eisha, we consider that, before she was pregnant, and therefore she's worth a certain amount, and now she's not pregnant, so now she's worth less. When we calculate that, there factors into that both things, says the Tanakhama, both the Dmei Vlodis, the value of the babies themselves, as whether it's Shvach Vlodis, as well as the fact that she looked bigger, and the fact that she looked bigger and healthier at the time. But the Mishnah continued, Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, Imkein Misha Isha Yeledes Mashpachas. That the problem with that kind of evaluation is that her value goes up after she gives birth, because again, then she's not in danger of dying in childbirth anymore. So my comma, what is that? What does Rav Shimon Gamliel mean exactly? The Tanakhama had said the other way around. So are they arguing on Metzius? So Omer Rabba, Hachi Kama, yeah, what Rav Shimon Gamliel means is, V'chi isha mashvachas koidim shetelid yosim ha'at mela'acha ketelid, does a woman's value increase after she gives, does a woman's value increase before she gives birth compared to afterwards? V'ala isha mashvachas la'acha shetelid yosim koidim shetelid. On the contrary, her value increases after she gives birth compared to before. Because now a potential buyer is not concerned that she may die in child. So therefore, Rav Shimon Gamliel says you can't calculate it that way because then you're going to come up that the mazik is not going to be paid anything. Ela shomnes avlodis v'noisim labal. Rather, you just have to figure out the value of the babies themselves, the value of them as to a potential buyer, v'noisim labal, and you give that amount to the husband. So again, according to Rashi, the machlokas is that we've been saying that the husband, the Tanakhama is saying that we have to pay both dmei vlodis and shvach vlodis to the husband, and Rav Shimon Gamliel is arguing that Tanakhama would say that the way that he calculated it includes both of them, and Rav Shimon Gamliel says that's going to be counterproductive, and rather we have to consider only Dmei Vlodis exclusively. According to Tosfos, that to begin with, even the Tanakhama knows we're only paying for Dmei Vlodis to the husband, because the woman's goof is not the property of the husband for him to collect depreciation for that. Then the machlokas between them is just how to calculate those Dmei Vlodis themselves. And the Gemara says, Tani Nami Hochi, we learn exactly in a Braisa, exactly like the way Rabbah learns what Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying. That he says, V'chi isha mashbachas penim shetelet, yoysim ala'acha shetelet, does a woman's value go up before, is it higher before she gives birth than after she gives birth? Follow isha mashbachas la'acha shetelet, yoysim penim shetelet, it's the other way around. Rather you figure out the value of the vlodis and you give them to the husband. Okay, so that's one way of understanding Rav Shimon Gamliel's point, is he's partially arguing with the Tanakhama and saying that you have it backwards, the value of a woman goes up after she gives birth rather than before, and therefore your way of calculating the difference is flawed. All that's one way of understanding it. Rav Amar Hochi Katonim. Rava says, no, you have to understand Rav Shimon Gamliel, there's a different meaning of what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying. After all, you have to consider, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, is it only that she's giving birth to, so who is she giving birth to the children for her husband, but is it only for him that she, is it only he that should get the improvement to her body that comes as a result of the pregnancy? That again, now she herself looks bigger and stronger and healthier. Doesn't she also have a certain right to some of the schus of the shvach of her own body? So in other words, Rava is pointing out another factor we have to consider. We have the value of the babies themselves, but then we have to also consider the fact that she herself looks bigger and looks healthier. Well, we were talking about that before, but Rava says that's exactly the machlokas between them, that Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying the dmei vlad is fine, the Torah assigns them to the husband, but the shvach in her own, the improvement in her own body, why should that go exclusively to the husband? Why should the woman herself not share in that as well? It's her body. Ella summons Dmei Vlodis, the Nason Abal, rather Rav Shimon Gamliel means, as far as the Dmei Vlodis, that you give exclusively to the husband. But as far as the improvement in her, actual health, then you divide that between her and her husband, because after all, it took the two of them together to create that shvach. It took the two of them together to create the babies as well, but fine, they observe a kosev that it goes exclusively to the husband. So that would be, according to Rava, so it's not a point like Rava had said, and like the Braisa had said, that he's arguing on the metzius of is she worth more before or after the pregnancy. Just according to Rava, Rav Shimon Gamliel is pointing out that you, Tanakama, seem to be saying that across the board, everything that's being paid over here in terms of the babies and in terms of the difference in her and in terms of the difference in her own fertility and health and all goes to the husband. And why should that be so? She should be sharing in that as well. Continues the Gemara, Tanya Nami Hochi. In fact, we also have a braisa that supports Rava's understanding of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, b'chi isha l'misha yeledes mashvachas. Is her improvement to be assigned only to the one for whom she's bearing the children, namely her husband? Ve'im l'isha atzim v'shvach lodes klum. Does the woman herself, is she not entitled to any of that shvach at all? Ela no shaman as nezek with naatzmai. Shaman nezek with naatzmai. Rather, we calculate the nezek by itself, but tsar with naatzmai, and we calculate the tsar by itself. Now, the nezek and the tsar, as we just said before, the nezek is going to be split between her and her husband according to the usual formula for nezek, 2/3 and 1/3, depending whether it's on an exposed or a hidden part of her body. The tsar, we said before, is also going to be calculated separately, and that's going to be paid to her. Then we calculate the value of the vlodis, and that we give exclusively to the husband, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, the shvach vlodis, the chokin and the chokin, and we calculate the improvement to her health that was caused while she was pregnant, the fact that now she looks healthier and stronger and whatever, and that we split between them, says Rav Shimon Gamliel. Well, the Gemara says, now that we have all that, well, now we seem to have a contradiction. Between Rav Shimon Gamliel's two statements. Here in the Braise, he's saying that chokin, that the shvach vlod is chokin, and therefore that means, in other words, so he agrees there is a shvach vlod is, and he's saying that she and her husband split them. Now, before, in the first Braisa, Rav Shimon, in Rabba's understanding, and in the first Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, what shvach vlod is? On the contrary, there's no shvach. There's a reduction in her value as long as she's pregnant. So it comes out, Rav Shimon Gamliel seems to be contradicting himself. What does he hold? Her value does go up while she's pregnant, for her herself, or it goes down. So now in Rabba's Braisa, it didn't actually mention Rav Shimon Gamliel's name, but uh, But since Rabbah was using it to explain Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion, then we have to understand that that braisa is a point to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Anyway, what does Rav Shimon Gamliel hold? Does he in fact hold that her value goes up during the pregnancy, or does he hold that it goes down? So the Gemara says, "Loi kasha kan b'mavakeres kan b'she'enim b'mavakeres." It depends whether this is her first pregnancy or afterwards. A first pregnancy, you don't know how it's going to be when she gives birth. She never has before, so there's a great risk that birth, and especially the first time that she goes through that experience of labor and birth, that she may die during that. And therefore, Shimon Gamliel is arguing that you can't talk about shvach in her body during that time, because on the contrary, the opposite, there may be the opposite of shvach in this case. So therefore, that would be the first braisa. That would be the first braisa. Kan b'she'enim b'vakeres, as opposed to when she's already given birth before, then the pregnancy and the birth are not really so hard on her, and therefore even Rav Shimon Gamliel would agree that there is a shvach to consider. And the difference is, he's saying you Tanakama are saying it goes exclusively to the husband, and I'm saying that you split it. Which in that case, then a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam, who wrote a Pirush on this Masechta, pointed out, then it comes out maybe Rabbah and Rabbah are not really arguing either. Maybe Rabbah is also talking about the first pregnancy, and Rabbah is talking about the second and later pregnancies. On the other hand, the Maharshal and Yamshal Shloima says that no, actually Rav Shimon Gamliel is really arguing on both points. He's saying that the Tanakama would say that even a first pregnancy, there is a greater value in her during the pregnancy than after it, because she is bigger and healthier. And Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees on that. And then with later pregnancies, then the Tanakama would say, yeah, whatever shvach there is goes to the husband, and Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that it's split between the two of them. So you'd have, according to that, then Rabbah and Rabbah would actually be arguing, and Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim are actually arguing on both points. Okay. V'rabbanan de amri shvach vlodis nami labal. Well, now let's look at the Chachamim. When they say, so they're disagreeing with Rav Shimon Gamliel and saying that whole shvach of the fact that she's pregnant also goes to the husband. My timer. So on what basis are they saying that? Rav Shimon Gamliel has a logical argument that it's her body and she should share in that shvach. What are the Chachamim reply to that? They say kiditznam, like we learn in a Mishnah, really kiditanya, it's really a braisa. Let's look at the pasuk. The pasuk describes that two people are fighting and they hit a pregnant woman. They hit isha hara. They hit a pregnant woman. The yotzu yoladeha, and her children, her unborn babies, come out. Now, so the braisa points out mimashma shenema v'yotzu yoladeha. If the pasuk is saying that her unborn children come out, she miscarries, any yadeh she hara. Wouldn't we know from that she was pregnant? Obviously, how else are there going to be babies coming out? Ma tamad lema hora. So why does the pasuk need to mention the word hora? Lo malach, because it comes to tell you, say the Chachamim, shvach heroyim labal, the whole improvement, everything that came about, all the improvement that came about as the result of the pregnancy, all of that is included in what the pasuk goes on to say, that the one who hit her has to pay the husband. So the Chum is saying, yes, you have a valid point that by rights, you would think logically some of it should go to her because it's her body. But the fact is, since the Torah uses this expression, hora, then we learn from that it has to be that all the improvement of the heroin, of the pregnancy, whether we're talking about the vladis themselves, whether we're talking about the improvement in her health, all of it goes to the husband. Okay, Rav Shimon Gamliel, my hora, my dorishbe. Fine, what does Rav Shimon Gamliel do with this word hora? So, he uses it to teach what it says in a different braisa. Rav Lezman Yaakov says that the man who hit her is chayev only if he hit her in the area where she's pregnant, meaning, in other words, on her stomach or someplace near that. Which Amar Apopel, like Tamek Kenegid Beis Hayroyin Mamish, doesn't necessarily literally mean that it has to be on her actual womb or on her actual stomach. El Kol Hecha B'Solik B'Shich Malavlad. It means any place where it would cause an injury to the child. So it could be, for example, on her back, it could be whatever. La puki yad v'regel deloy, all Rav Elazar ben Yaakov means by that is, as opposed to if the guy hit her on her arm or on her leg, where there's no way that that's going to, there's no way that that's going to directly affect, there's no way that that's going to affect the unborn baby, because the arm or the leg is nowhere near that. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying, if she miscarried in that case, then we can't make him chayav for dmei vlodis, because we can't say that the miscarriage happened as a direct result of him hitting. So he learns that from the word hara. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel agrees with that. Therefore, he says you don't have the word hara available to teach us about what improvements in her value go to the husband versus what go to her. The Mishnah continued. We said that if the woman was a shivcha who had been freed or gyoras, then we said he's potter. And again, we said Rashi explains that that means that she was already nisgaira or nishtachara before the guy ever hit her. She's married to an eved meshuchra or a ger, and then that guy dies without any children. Then the one who hit her is potter, because now there's nobody to collect the dmei vlodis, because again it goes to the husband, and in this case he has no yoshin. Again, we said before that Tosfos had brought from the Riva that maybe it's talking about that she became pregnant when she was a shifcha, and then she was freed during the pregnancy, and then the same thing with the Yoras, and Tosfos said, no, that doesn't really fit. That doesn't really fit. The Rambam and Pirush Mishnayos also mentioned that point, and says that the Mishnah, that may be true, but that would be poshut. We're talking about over here that she was already meshuchra or giyurus at the time of the attack, and then afterwards her husband died. Anyway. So Omer Rabba lo shonu. So that's the thing. Now the Gemara is going to discuss lo shonu al shechava b'chaya ger u'mesa ger. When are we talking about is when he hit her while her husband, the ger, was alive, umesa ger, and now the ger died, the kibin de chavava b'chaya ger, zachavol ger. What happens is, once he hit her while the ger was alive, at that point, her husband, the ger, is zoyche in that dmei vlodis, the kibin de mesa ger, once the ger dies, zachavol min ager, then the ger's property is hefker, and now this other yid ended up being zoycha from hefker.
What can she do herself?
She herself, if she manages to get that money, then sure, she could keep it, but the point is, she doesn't have the ability to take it away from him. He's the muchzik in that money.
He means
the guy who hit her. The guy who hit
him. He didn't give him the money.
But says Rabba, if he were to hit her after her husband, the ger, died, so she was a geyoras. She's married to a ger. She became pregnant. Then her husband died. Now somebody hit her and she miscarried. Zachri lo ihi b'gavayu. Then she herself is zoyche in that money. Umachayev shalom ilo d'dido. And therefore the one who hit her is chayev to pay her herself, says Rabba.
She wouldn't take over her husband.
She can't be yodish her husband. Definitely not. We've learned before a woman doesn't yaushin her husband. Just the opposite. A husband yaushins his wife.
But if there's no one else in the family.
Doesn't matter. But Omer Rav Chista, Mori Dechi. But Rav Chista says, master of this, meaning you, Rab Dechi, is an Aramaic word, meaning this. Meaning it's you, Rabba, who've said this din, please explain it. You're saying that if her husband died beforehand, then she takes over the ability to get dmei vlodis from him. But what are the babies like tsrori? Are they like a bundle of money? Yeah, like a package or a bundle of money v'zachi b'hu, that she could be zoyche in them when her husband is not around. So in other words, Tosfos points out it's one thing Yoshin, he agrees, of course, the Mishnah says that they're Yoshining, but the question is, how is she getting? Ella, Rav Chista argues, Isila Baal Zochale Rachmana, if the husband is around, then the Torah is Mizaka, the money to him. let's say Labal, and if the husband is not around, argues a chista loy, then no, there's nobody to collect it. So therefore, it shouldn't make a difference whether her husband died before or after she was injured.
Before she gets a certain amount of the
shvach vlodis. We said according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, she gets a certain amount of the shvach. Here we're talking about dmei vlodis. Here we're talking about however we define narrowly the value of the children themselves, the value of the unborn babies. Suppose that somebody else were to be buying just the children alone, then how are we dealing with that? So now
she can't sell the children themselves. That she would.
She wouldn't be able to sell them herself. But that's not the point. The point is, in other words, her chista is saying they're not like an asset that her husband bequeaths to her that we could now say that she gets. So the Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction. Then I have a contradiction on Rabbah. In fact, the Braisa says, Hikar se isha v'yosiyula deha. A man hit a woman and she miscarried. So we just said before, we quoted the Braisa before, Noisin Nezik Batsau Leisha, we pay Nezik and Sau to the woman, I mean, we didn't quote this exact Braisa before, but whatever. We said that Nezik and Sau go to the woman, which we said before, Nezik actually doesn't go completely to her, usually part of it goes to her, whatever, in this case, where she has no husband, the pastor goes all to her, with Sau, and he pays the Sau to the woman, or Dmei Vlodis Labal, and Dmei Vlodis go to the husband. Ainat Baal, if the husband's not around, no, if he died, no son the Yoshev, then you give it to his Yoshev. Ainat Isha, no son the Yosheha. And if the woman is not, if the woman is not around because she died, then you give her part to her Yoshev. And the Braisa continues, Hosha Shifcha v'nishtafra, o Giyoris, if she was a Shifcha, and now she's freed, or she was a Giyoris, Zocha, then he is Zocha. The word he is Zocha means that the man himself who hit her is allowed to keep the Dmei Vlodis. Because again, you have her husband being a Ger, he has no Yoshin to inherit it. Now, Rabbah had said that if the husband died before the injury, then she gets it. So our Braisa seems to be saying that in all cases, the Mazik gets to keep the money.
But there's no punishment for everything.
But that's it's not like based in, I guess it depends. I mean, if we're talking about the guy did it by accident, if the guy did it on purpose, based in may find it necessary to punish him some other way, that's another matter. But we're talking about as far as the actual din of the Torah over here, as far as may vlodis, look, there's nobody to collect it. It would be the same way, for example. Imagine, for example, a plain case. You know, you have a ger she'en lo yoshin, and somebody causes a hezek to some property of his, and then the next day the ger dies. The fact is, there's nobody for him to pay, right? So, not necessarily. I mean, again, if the local based and finds it necessary to do that, Lamigda Milsa, fine, you know, but not. Anyway, so the question is on Rabbah, because the Braisa seems to be saying that across the board, always, either the husband gets it, or his Yoshim get it, and if he has no Yoshim, then nobody gets it, whereas Rabbah is saying there's a difference whether the husband was alive at the time of the attack or not. Where Rabbi had said that if the husband died before the attack, then she gets the money. And the Braisa is not mentioning that possibility at all.
About her
getting it. Right. So the Gemara says, Amri. So they answer back. What's the problem? Is the Braisa that we just quoted any stronger than the Mishnah? We just explained that Rabbah had explained that the Mishnah is specifically talking about where he hit her when her husband, the Ger, was alive, and then her husband died. So, Hochanami, the same thing the Braisa is Shechovah Babachaya Ger Mesager. So the Braisa is talking about the same scenario. The Braisa is not addressing the case where her husband died before she was ever attacked. Yes, then we can still have Rabbah's din that she gets the money. Tosfos points out, I mean, so what was the Makshin even thinking, bringing the Braisa? Because the Braisa mentions Nezik and Sar, and you would think Nezik and Sar always apply. There's always Nezik and Sar to pay, the same way Zocha B'dmei Vlodis, you would think, always applies. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that, no, Nezik and Sar, you always have to pay, but Zocha, it's going to depend on the circumstances. Sometimes yes, sometimes not.
The husband's there or not,
right? The Borisema, another way you could answer, La'acha Mrs. Ager. In fact, you could say that Braisa means that we're talking about where she was hit after her husband died. You're going to say it contradicts Rabbah. The Tani Zochsa in that case, learn that in that case, the Braisa doesn't really mean Zocha, he was Zocha in it, but rather Zochsa, she was Zocha in it. Meaning, Tosfa says, in other words, we're not even really correcting the word in the Braisa, we're saying whoever is appropriate to be Zocha in it under these conditions is going to be the one Zocha in it. It's going to be the husband in some cases, the wife in some cases, and the Mazik himself in some cases, if the husband was alive at the time of the attack and then afterwards died, where therefore he should have gotten that money, and now he has no Yoshi.
The little man Tangora says that he uses the word. In general.
Right, so that's what Tosfos is saying. I mean, the general word that was saying, Zocha Mishi Yeshlo Schus, whoever is the appropriate one to be having the Schus under these conditions is getting the money. So in fact, Ma'aram Shif and Torah Schaim talk about that. Given that now Tosfos had learned earlier that again the question was the Braisa had put together Dmei Vlodis together with Nezik and Sar, implying that all of them apply across the board. So if the Braisa, if you can actually change the word to mean Zochsa, then you're going to still have to make a distinction between that. Then you're talking Davka, where was Lacha Mrs. Agir. And then in that case, then it's not like Nezik and Sarah, because Nezik and Sarah are always going to apply, and this Zochsa would only apply if her husband died before the attack. That's why Tosfos is saying we're not actually correcting the Braisa, we're just saying the word Zocha, yeah, is a general thing. Whoever is supposed to be Zocha is Zocha, depending on the individual circumstances. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, so far what we have is we have a machlokas Rabba and Rav Chista. What happens in that case? Where Rabba is saying if the husband had died before the attack, then she gets the money for the Dmei Vlodis, and Rav Chista had argued it's not so. That it always has to be either her husband or his Yoshim, and if there's no husband and no Yoshim, then nothing happens. So now, the Gemara says, Lema Ketanoi, should we say that this machlokas of Rabba and Rav Chista is actually the same as a machlokas Tanoi? Because the Braisa says, Bas Yisrael Shenissas Lager, a Jewish woman who is married to a Ger, for our purposes, doesn't matter whether she's a born Bas Yisrael or whether she's a Geiris. Rashi had pointed out in the Mishnah, typically a Shifra Meshacheris marries an Eved Meshacher, and typically a Geiris marries a Ger, but it doesn't have to be that way necessarily. Anyway, so Bas Yisrael was married to a Ger, Venis Abrami Menu, she became pregnant from him, then the reason why the Braisa is mentioning Bas Yisrael, by the way, is partially because if we're talking about that she became pregnant when they were, if they were a Goyish a couple, and then she became pregnant, and then they became Geirim, then this whole concept of Mei Vlodis wouldn't necessarily apply because the whole concept of Mei Vlodis only applies among Jews. Anyway. So, and here, where she was pregnant beforehand, then it wouldn't be the same thing. Anyway, so when this Abrami Menu, she became pregnant from him. Someone injured her while her husband, the Ger, was alive. Noisens Mei Vlodis. Then he pays Mei Vlodis to the Ger, to her husband. La'acha misses a Ger. Now what happens is if the guy hit her after her husband died. So then, Tony Choda, Chayev, but Tony Choda, Potter. One Braisa says he's Chayev to pay, and the other one says he's Potter from paying. So, my love, Tanoim, you know. So therefore, it seems you have an exact machlokas Tanoim on this point. According to Rabba, the Braisa that says Chayev would work according to Rabba. The Braisa that says Potter would work according to Rav Chista. But the Gemara says not necessarily. The Rabba vade Tanoim. According to Rabba, there's no question it's a machlokas tanoim. There's no way that he can explain the braisa that says potter, because according to him, the mazik is never going to be potter. It's always going to be he gives either to the husband if the husband's still alive, or to the wife if the husband died before the attack. Meaning, and that's, we're talking about where the husband died before the attack. Rabba does agree that if the husband was alive at the time of the attack, and then he died, then there's no Yoshim, and then the Mazik is Potter. But the Braisa over here was saying, La'acha Mrs. Agir, the Braisa is saying. If he died, if the attack was La'acha Mrs. Agir, then there's no way, according to Rabba, that the Mazik is ever going to be Potter. Either he's paying, since he can't pay the husband, then he's paying the wife. Do we have to say that Rav Chista's statement is also subject to a machlokas tanoim, that he would say only the braisa that says potter supports him, and the one that says chayev would not work according to him? And the answer is loy kasha. that that no, Rav Chisda can answer back. That no, it's not a question. Harabbanan of a Harab Shimon Gamliel, because one brisa is pointed to the Rabbanan, and the other one is pointed to Shimon Gamliel. So the brisa, as far as Dmei Vlodis is going to be Potter, that's what Rav Chisda is saying. As far as Chayev, we're not talking about Dmei Vlodis, we're talking about Shvach Vlodis, and that would follow Rav Shimon Gamliel, who said that of the Shvach Vlodis, half of it belongs to her. Well, she's still alive, so she gets her half of Shvach Vlodis. So therefore, so the Braisa that says Chayev is not contradicting Rav Chisda, because it's not talking about Dmei Vlodis, but rather about something else that he has to pay her in connection with the pregnancy. Well, if you want to ask Eid of Shimon Gamliel, my Uyal Achamisa. Well, if you're telling me that that Braisa, that this Chayim, is a coincidence of Shimon Gamliel, then why does the Braisa Davka talk about after the Ger died, Afilu Mechayim, Nami Isla Pauga? And if the Ger was alive, if her husband was alive, she'd also be getting half of it. So then in that case, so the Braisa shouldn't be distinguishing, if the Braisa is a coincidence of Shimon Gamliel, there's no reason to distinguish whether her husband is still living or not. And the answer is. If we're saying chayev means he's always chayev to pay, then the braisa should be saying, regardless whether the husband died before the attack or not, either way he's chayev, because in the one case appointed Shimon Gamliel, he's paying Dmei Vlodis to the husband and half the Shvach Vlodis to her and half to her husband, and if her husband's dead, he's paying half of Shvach Vlodis to her. But if the braisa is saying chayev when her husband died before the attack, then that how is that appointed Shimon Gamliel? And the answer is mechayim isla palga la'acham misa b'kule, because that's what happens when her husband is alive. She's only getting half of shvach vlodis. But if it happens after her husband dies, then she gets the entire shvach. Then she gets the entire shvach vlodis. The dmei vlodis, fine, she can't get, because that Torah specifically assigned to the husband. But the shvach vlodis, where Shimon Gamliel was saying before, by rights half of it should go to her and half to him. Well, now when he's not around anymore, then it'll go completely to her. That is why the braisa is distinguishing between whether the husband died or not, because you have that difference. Is he chayev in the entire shvach vlodis, or is he chayev in only half? Another way you can answer is that both braises, both the one that says chayev and that says potter, are both according to Shimon Gamliel, and the shvach vlodis can be dmei vlodis. So one's talking about shvach vlodis and one's talking about dmei vlodis. Dmei vlodis says Rav Chisda, you're going to be potter after the husband dies because the Torah assigned it to him and now he's dead and he has no yoshin. The shvach vlodis, on the other hand, the guy is chayev. So you don't have to say that the braises are talking Rav Shimon Gamliel versus the Chachamim. Both of them can go according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Even Rav Shimon Gamliel himself is making that distinction between the different kinds of payments. Well, Amri, but they said in that case, why? Consider Mishvach Vlodis Lishmad Dmei Vlodis. From what was saying about Shvach Vlodis, shouldn't we be able to derive from that what happens as far as Dmei Vlodis? Meaning, in other words, if we're saying that by Shvach Vlodis, was saying when her husband was alive, according to Shimon Gamliel, she was entitled to only half of it. Now, after he dies, you're telling me that she gets all of it. So then, why don't we learn from that the same thing with Dmei Vlodis, that she wouldn't have gotten the Dmei Vlodis while her husband was alive, but now her husband is dead, then she should, at least she should get, if not the whole thing, at least she should get half of it. Umidir Shimon Gamliel Lishma Rabbanan, and furthermore, based on Shimon Gamliel's opinion, in that case, we should be able to derive what the Chachamim themselves say. Because fine, we have the Rabbanan and Shimon Gamliel are arguing about what happens after, while the husband is alive, whether we split the Shvach Vlodis between them, or whether the Shvach Vlodis goes with the Dmei Vlodis and all goes to the husband. We don't find them arguing about what happens after he dies. So therefore, so why should we assume the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel are disagreeing on that point? If you're telling me, Rav Chisda, that Rav Shimon Gamliel himself is drawing a distinction between Mechayim and La'achamisa, then we should assume the Chachamim are accept that same distinction as well. So in that case, we should be able to say that everything goes to her, or at least half of it goes to her. So still, don't we have a contradiction on Rav Chisda, who says that the Dmei Vlodis are complete? He's completely potter from. The answer is no. The difference is Ami. They answered back Loi. There's a big difference between them. shvach vod is the shaykh yodr b'gavayu. When it comes to the shvach in her own body as the result of the pregnancy, she has a shaykhus to it because it's her body after all. Therefore, zachir b'hu b'chulu. Therefore, when it happens after her husband died, then she's zoche in all of it. Beforehand, she already had a half ownership of it, according to Shimon Gamliel. Therefore, now she should get full ownership of it. Dmei vodis, deloy shaykh yodr b'gavayu. But when it comes to the dmei vodis, she had no shaykhus, but in other words, because the Torah said, dmei vodis, go to the husband. Xeris HaKosis, if they go to the husband, therefore, loy zachi b'hu klal, therefore, if the husband dies, then there's nothing for her to be zoichen at all. It's like hechter. And now, therefore, the mazik doesn't have to pay it. And according to the Chachamim, the same thing would be true as far as the shvach vodis, because they said, based on the word hora, as we learned on Amud Aleph, that dmei vodis and shvach vodis go together. Because they said that, they said since the pasuk has to specify that she was pregnant, then therefore that implies that all the shvach caused during the pregnancy it all goes together and it all goes to the husband. And therefore, as we're saying over here, if the husband is a ger and died without yoshim, then there's nobody to get it.
So
that's what I'm saying. Even the wife, because the wife is Yarushin, her husband. If we were talking about Yerusha.
I'm not talking about the Megvodis and the Shvach.
The Shvach, that's what I'm saying. They said the Chachamim said Megvodis and Shvach Vodis go together.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but then why is she getting part of it?
So that according to the Chachamim, she's not. That's the point.
Even when he's alive?
Well, that's what we said. When he's alive, the Chachamim say that neither Dmei Vlodis nor Shvach Vlodis goes to her. All of it goes to the husband. What she gets is other factors. You have Nezik, the fact that now, permanently, she's injured. You have Tsar, you have whatever. Those things go to her or are split between her and her husband. But as far as the specific things, anything specifically in connection with the pregnancy, the Chamse go exclusively to the husband.
The factors go to the
husband. Right, exactly.
The Shvach.
The Shvach and the Dmei Vlodis.
Shvach
meaning how that she herself is worth more, and Dmei Vlodis the fact that she would have been children that couldn't sell her. Okay. Now let's talk about a general point, since we're talking about a ger who died and left no yoshim, and therefore his money is hefter. So now let's talk about a related case. Bominir of Yeva Savim Rav Nachman. Hamachzik b'shtarois of shal ger mal. What happens if you have a yid who's holding on to a shtar of a ger? And Rashi explains what we have is you have a different yid had a shibud on his karka and the ger was the owner of that shibud. So in other words, you have like this. So you have Reuven owns a field. He put it under a shibud to Shimon the ger. Reuven put it under shibud to Unkelos the ger. Let's call him that. And so therefore now, so Unkelos has now a shibud on this character. He gave the.
He has a
shibud. However, it could be Reuven owes him money for some reason. It could be that he borrowed money from him. It could be that he was mazik him. Whatever the case, Unkelos now has a shtar. Now has a shibud on this character. Meanwhile, you have Shimon. Meanwhile, Unkelos gave Shimon the shtar to hold on to. So now when the ger dies, and in fact the shach explains what we mean is basically that the ger is saying to Shimon, you can keep this shtar. Now the question is, when the ger dies, mahu, what is Shimon's rights? Man demachzik b'shtara, is it that Shimon who's holding on to the shtar, adaita de arahu demachzik, he's holding on to it, having in mind that through it he can be zoche in the karka. The Gemara elsewhere has the expression that the shtar is like the bridle, like the reins of the karka, the same way as you control an animal and you take it wherever you want, right? It's reins the same way. The karka goes with the shtar. So the problem is then he didn't make a chazaka in the ground, so he doesn't have a way of being koina that ground, or shtara nami lekona, in which case he wouldn't have been koina the shtar either, the actual paper itself, the lav daiti ashtara, because he doesn't have in mind to be koina the paper itself. What can he do with a piece of paper? He has in mind to use it only as a means of acquiring the karka. The problem is he went about it the wrong way, because as soon as the ger died, he should have then maybe we could say he should have rushed over and made a chazaka on the karka, and like this he didn't, and therefore this other yid was zoche in that karka the moment the ger died.
By having his own fences around it, he's zoche.
The Ger, remember, didn't own this character. No, he only had a sheep.
From a Reuven. Reuven
had a
deal.
Yeah,
so that sense then.
Right, so then maybe,
even if the Ger, if even so if the guy's come running, it wouldn't
even
help.
If the guy's come running, he might not help. That's true, yeah. Or, Odoma Daite Nami Ashtara. Or maybe we could say that Shimon does at least have in mind to be, to at least be Kohen of the Shtar itself. Omalei, sort of, Nachman says, you're asking a question. Ani Mori, answer me, explain to me, Rebbe, what does he need the Shtar for? Does he just need a piece of paper that he can use to wrap around the top of a bottle? Obviously, he means to be Kohen of the character of him. Omalei, sort of, Yevas, yes, actually, yeah, that is my question. Lots over lots, yes, my question is exactly that. Suppose he does want to use it as a bottle stopper. Does he have the right to do that? Or do we say that, no, since the other Yid continues to own the karka, then he's also entitled to have the shtar? So that's the question. And in fact, the halacha is that, yes, the Shimon gets to keep the shtar. He can't use it to actually own the karka, because he didn't make a chazaka on the karka. But he does own the shtar, and yes, he can use it for whatever piece, for whatever purpose he would want to use a piece of paper for.
Just seems like we learned before that Ger just gave it the hold, I understand. But the Ger said from here, you can.
Ger said you can keep the shtar, but he didn't say you can keep the karka.
What to keep it? What did you say?
Well, that's what Rav Yehuda. That's what Rav
Yehuda. That means keep the karka.
No. That's what Rav Yehuda Sava is saying. He's saying that to be Kohen of the karka, he would have had to do something before the Ger died. Right. Once the Ger dies, then that's it. The other yid is zeichen and in a half care. So it's we can only talk about what happens with the shtar.
What good is he telling him by telling him?
Because he's telling him, in other words, that now you have an extra piece of paper if you want. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. More on this topic of Gerim and what happens after they die. Omer Rabba, Mashkoina Shal Yisrael B'Yad Din. Suppose you have a Yid borrowed money from a Ger and gave him a Mashkin. Umes HaGer. Now the Ger died and everything is hefker. Uvo Yisrael Achav HaHechzik Boy. Another Yid comes and takes away that mashkin, because he figures, look, everything of the gears is hefker, so that includes this mashkin as well. Then we take away that mashkin from him, and we give it back to the loiver. So again, you have two Jews over here, Reuven and Shimon. Between them, you have the ger unkelos. So when unkelos dies, we say that Reuven's mashkin goes back to him. Shimon does not have the right to take it from when he's going through unkelos's property. My timer. Yeah. My timer. Why is that? Given to miss the ger, pokal shibud. As soon as the ger dies, the shibud is over. So therefore, now he doesn't have a shibud. Now he doesn't have a shibud on this mashkin anymore.
Why is the mashkin in his house?
The mashkin was in his house because when he died, it was still there. But as soon as he died, in other words, even though it's in his house, it's not his actual possession. He only had a shibud on it. But now that he died, that shibud is gone. So therefore, the original yid gets it back. On the other hand, continues Rabba, Mashkoina shel ger b'yad Yisrael, if it was the other way around, the ger, Unkelos, had borrowed money from the Yid and given him a mashkin, umes ger, now Unkelos passed away, uboy Yisrael achav hechzik boy, another Yid wants to come and take that mashkin of the ger, well then fine, that mashkin did belong to the ger, and now it's hefker. Therefore, what we're going to talk about in a minute, what about the fact that it's in his house? What happens is, the malva, the one who was originally holding on to the mashkin, he's koine an amount of that mashkin equal to the money that he lent. Vizek koine es hashar, and the other one is koine the rest. So Reuven had lent $200 to Unkelos. He had lent him $100 rather. Unkelos had given him a mashkin worth $200. So now when Unkelos passes away, then each of them gets $100 of it. So the Gemara asks. Why should Shimon get anything involved? Like you said, Tikkun Le Chatzer, right? Shouldn't his Chatzer be coined for him? A person's Chatzer can acquire something for him even without his Das. Yeah, and the answer, no, the Torah has nothing to do with
it. I mean, this expression goes many times in his Chavin Lod.
No, that's something else. Zachin Lod and Shalom Kone Ben Chavin Lod, that's something else, isn't it? So the answer, we're talking about over here where he's not present in town, so therefore he can't be koine through the chotzer, because when the ger passed away, in other words, then Reuven is out of town. So because the rule is kol heicha de isal de boy makni, when Reuven is in town and he could have been makne to somebody else, Motzi Koni. So then he's able to be, and it can be boy Makni Motzi Koni. If the Malva himself wanted to be Koina that Mashkin, Kan Yule Nami Chatzera, then his Chotzer can be Koina for him, even though even without him doing anything. Kol Hechad the lesser Lidi Day. But if he's not in town, the boy Hula Mikni, the Motzi Koni, if he wanted to be Koina that Mashkin, he wouldn't be able to. Chatzera Nami Le Kanya, then the Chotzer is, not Koina.
What about if he sends a shliach?
What he could say if he sends a shliach, fine. If he does kinyan chatzer, then whatever. But here we're talking about he didn't do any of the above. He expected.
Right. But can he be out of town? Can he be out of town and send a shliach?
If he's out of town, b'pashtus, he can send a shliach. Shulchan shalom kamoisik b'pashtus. But the fact is he didn't. And therefore now when Shimon went and grabbed this mashkin, then Reuven is entitled to an amount of the mashkin equal to the amount he lent out. To that extent, is considered the owner of it, but the rest of it is Hefker, and because it was, after all, the property of the Ger, and therefore Shimon's able to get it.
If it was in his house, it would be different.
We're talking about it in his house.
In his house,
whatever, for our purposes, is the same thing. I mean, obviously, Shimon doesn't have the right to barge into his house and take it, but let's say, for example, so you can have, let's say, Shimon is allowed to be there for some other reason, or you could say, you can have it in the case of a house. Well, you could also have it in the case of a house, you can have people that share a house, but besides that, also, let's say you have, for some reason, Shimon is allowed to be there. Anyway.
The house, would there be difference?
No. So then the Gemara says, right. In fact, the halacha is, the lesse b'chatzera, the loikana. In fact, that would be the case. Rashi explains that, no, actually, we're not talking about, the Rashi explains that lesse over here means a little different than it did before. Before, lesse means the malve, Reuven, is out of town. Now we're saying that, no, what it means is, when would this halacha apply? When the mashkin is not in the chotzer of the malva at the time when the ger died. If it was in his chotzer, then the Gemara would be saying he'd be kone regardless whether he's in town or not. So different than what we were saying before. We were arguing that only when the malva is in town, where he's able to be kone, then he's kone as soon as the ger dies, but if not, then not. Now we're saying that no, the key difference is the mashkin in his chotzer at the time of the ger's death. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says maybe, but on the other hand, maybe what it means is that the person himself was not there. Meaning, in other words, that the Gemara is saying. So, in other words, according to Rashi, it comes out when the Gemara is saying vehilchsa. The Gemara is saying that no, don't understand like you did it until now. Rather, understand that the halacha can be established that in a different scenario, that it depends whether the mashkin was there or not. According to Tosfos, one possibility is that the Gemara means no. We gave an answer that there's a difference whether Reuven is in town or not. That is in fact a valid distinction, and unless the guy is in town, then he won't be koyin. As far as the first possibility that we're talking about whether the mashkin is in the chotzer or not, Tosfos points out that the fact is we do have a distinction between chotzer ha-mishtameras and chotzer she'en mishtameras. So there's your distinction between a house and a chotzer. If it's something where the door is closed and people can't just come in without permission, then he doesn't need to be standing there in order to be koneh. So then you can have the mashkin can be in his house. He's out of town. Doesn't matter. He's still koneh because it's a chotzer mishtameras. If it was a chotzer she'en mishtameras, then he would have to be standing next to there in order and say zochsel yisodi.
That's why I'm bringing down the word, the word chatzar, not bias.
Right. So
few people could be sharing the same chatzar.
Right. So according to Tosfos, explaining Rashi, that distinction in the end would be valid. We would say if the mashkin is in the house, then he's koneh regardless, the entire $200 worth of it, and if it's in a place she'ena mishtameres, then he would have to be present in order to be koneh. And then again, Tosfos brings another possibility is that we're saying that it depends whether he himself is in town, like the original answer that we gave. So it doesn't matter whether it's in his house or chutz or whatever. It depends whether he is in town. Okay.
We're going to have some story where a guy passes away and someone puts something or fixes around the edges.
We're going to talk about that in Baba Basra, Beis Hashem. We're going to get to in Baba Basra. We're going to talk about more of these dinim of acquiring property of gear before. We had in Kiddushin as well. We also had in Kiddushin. We had a story over there involving Rabbi Yehuda in Devar, who had an Eved, and one of the other Chachamim was Koinet as soon as it was Koinet the Eved, as soon as Rabbi Yehuda passed away. Yeah. So yeah, these kinds of things are discussed in various places in chess. One of the big places about it is indeed in Bogomaster.